BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Good evening. The phrase access to opera usually refers to bringing opera to a wider audience, not just what's seen as the opera-loving few. But on tonight's In Touch, it signifies something different. We'll meet two visually impaired musicians who've travelled thousands of miles to further their careers. In a moment, the woman who came from New Zealand initially as a violinist before the opera bug bit.
I never imagined it could be anything serious. I never dreamed that actually I had professional vocal potential at all. I was very focused on the violin. So I went and saw the head of vocal studies and said, please, could I do singing as a second study? And she said, absolutely, of course you can.
This lady has travelled even further than you, not only to develop her own career, but also to encourage other disabled performers to do the same. She's been telling her story to our reporter, Toby Davey.
Hello, I am Joanne Roughton-Arnold. I am an opera singer. I'm the co-founder of Formidability, but originally I came here from New Zealand to pursue a career as a violinist.
You bussed your way around New Zealand to afford the funds to come over here, and you came here as a violinist to study. What made you want to take up singing and become an opera singer?
I've always been fascinated by language, and when I was doing my postgraduate violin studies at Trinity College of Music in London, there was the option to take a second study. So, and there's something in me had been wanting to sing, but I never imagined it could be anything serious. I never dreamed that actually I had professional vocal potential at all. I was very focused on the violin. So I went and saw the head of vocal studies and said, please, could I do singing as a second study? And she said, absolutely, of course you can. So she sent me to a wonderful, wonderful singing teacher called Esther Salomon. And when I came out of it, I thought, well, I really love this singing, but I don't know if I love it because there are no strings attached. No pun intended. So I did a concert where I sang and I played. So it was a lunchtime recital, and I played the Debussy violin sonata, and I sang some songs by Fauré in the middle, and then I played some Sanson on the violin at the end. And after the concert, I thought, no, it is singing. It really is, because you've got the text, you're telling a story, you can have a really direct communication with your audience. So that's what made me think, no, this is the right path for me.
Back in New Zealand, what sort of supports and facilities were on offer for you as a visually impaired musician, and did it differ from the sort of support that you've got here?
I didn't really get a lot of support in New Zealand, which sounds terrible, and I don't mean it in a terrible way at all. The attitude that my parents really instilled in me was, never mind, you can't see so well, so have a good life anyway, get on with it. And just find ways to do what you want to do. So I just used to manage as best I could. As a violinist, it was always challenging in orchestras because I couldn't, you have to share a music stand, and I couldn't get close enough to be able to read both pages of the music. So I could see the page nearer me, but the other one was always out of focus. But to answer your question about the support, I'd been over here for a little while, and I was just out of, I forgot, boredom one day, I can't remember, I googled nystagmus, which is the condition I have. And lo and behold, I found the UK Nystagmus Network. And suddenly there was all this information that I hadn't had before. So much more than I was ever told by eye consultants and so on in New Zealand. And suddenly a lot of things fell into place about what I found difficult and why I found it difficult.
As a visually impaired person, how accessible is, you know, the career of a singer performing on stage? Because some people might say, well, it's not the most easiest of environments for somebody visually impaired to get around and know where they are on stage, and also react as a singer to the conductor and everything else.
There are ways around it. It depends on how severe a visual impairment is. So in my case, I'm partially sighted. Everything is out of focus unless it's very close. I don't have depth perception, and I struggle with bright lights, which would make you think a stage probably isn't the most friendly, welcoming environment. But what I've done, I've dealt with the lights, because thanks to the fabulous contact lens department at Moorfield Eye Hospital. They've issued me with piggyback lenses, so I wear one lens at each eye that has a really deep green tint to it to cut out the glare, and then I wear my prescription lens on top of that, and a rigid one. The issue with depth perception, so as you can imagine, stages can have different levels, and you can find yourself dealing with steps and uneven surfaces and all sorts. So I just always make sure I get on the stage and I walk around the set and let myself develop the muscle memory for how deep each step is, where is there a handrail. Seeing the conductor in rehearsals, you're closer to them, so that you build up a relationship. You're physically closer to the conductor than you are when you actually get on the stage and they're down on the pit. And for them to understand what works for you and where they might need to give you a bigger gesture for you to catch it. I had kind of conflicting advice about how to cope as a visually impaired singer. And the advice I was given was to audition. And in my case, my visual impairment is not obvious to people who don't know me. So I can walk into an audition room and perform and they have no idea that I'm partially sighted. But because of being worried about safety issues on stage, I thought it's kind of a good idea to mention to a company that I've got a visual impairment. And I followed the advice, and the reaction I usually got was embarrassment and no work. So I stopped saying anything. And then I thought, I've got to go the other way. So I kept really quiet about it and I began to get work. And I had my first contract was with Opera Holland Park. I spent 4 seasons not saying anything about being visually impaired, except for some very close friends in the chorus who knew, who could just give me a little bit of help if I needed it. And then along came the Paralympics in 2012, and it just felt like things were changing. I forget exactly how soon after that, but RNIB were running a workshop for visually impaired children in conjunction with Opera Holland Park. And the RNIB said they'd love me to be involved in that workshop, but they realised that Opera Holland Park didn't know that I was visually impaired. So I might need to say something, and they wanted to make sure I was comfortable. And I decided, right, it's time to say it. So there I was in my 4th year working for them, 4th summer, and I said, so I've been talking to James at RNIB, and they'd really like me to be involved in this workshop. Oh, yes. And I said, because I've been a client of them for quite a while. And then you could almost hear the jaw fall on the floor. And I explained that I hadn't said anything because I'd had this experience of people making 2 and 2 make 5. But they were absolutely wonderful about it and immediately got me involved in the workshop. And the following year, I led the equivalent workshop. So it was just really nice to actually be able to be open.
You've just co-founded Formidability, which is all about both access on stage and off stage for performers and audience alike. What made you want to form the company?
I felt that opera could reach so many more people if the people that you see on stage better reflect the reality of the diversity of our audiences. And, you know, I read somewhere that I think 20% of the UK population has a disability, but you don't see anything like that number on stage. And I don't know if you even see that number in the audience. So I thought, well, let's find a way to make it possible for disabled artists to work on stage. But we're not about exclusivity. We're about bringing people together. So Formidability is a healthy mix of both disabled and non-disabled artists working together, because the most important thing to us is to create really, really high quality art and to make the production the most important thing. It just happens to be that a healthy proportion of us are disabled.
What's the future for Formidability and for yourself as an opera singer? How do you see the future going?
Well, I really hope that from this, Formidability can slowly grow. We're going to take it bit by bit by bit, incrementally. I'd love to be able to commission new music, work with companies like Sign Dance Collective and Rationale Method more, continue the sort of partnership. And I think that accessibility doesn't need to be boring. It can be really exciting and beautiful. And so something that enhances the performance for the whole audience, whether you're disabled or not. So, yeah, so I think this has got wings.
That's Joanne Rawton-Arnold singing part of Schoenberg's Piero Lunea, ending Toby Davies' report. From me, Peter White, producer Lee Kumutat, goodbye.